I'd like to call the meeting to order. Mr. Crawford, can you please lead us in the pledge?
Could you please rise, face the flag, and follow after me, please? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
I would request one change to the agenda, and the change I'd like to make is to bring business services number 2 on page 10 and bring it up to page 2 under presentations. So business services number 2 is the MOU with the Yuba Sutter Regional Arts Council, and then just move that agenda item up to under the presentations. If there's no objections from the board members, we'll make that happen. Not hearing any, we'll go ahead and make that change to today's agenda. Thank you. Trying to get clarification, we're going to ask the expert, Lisa, do we need to make a motion for that? Or true. can we make an agenda?
We have it in the packet. It's fine. I'll just move it on there. It's fine. There's no one.
Okay. Thank you. Announcements taken in closed session. Announcements of action taken in closed session. Well, hopefully that's not going to be a whole start of tonight.
You're on a roll.
Yeah. By unanimous vote, the board approved resolution 2019-2020/22, release non-reelection of temporary certificated employees, including probationary O. By unanimous vote, the board approved resolution 2019-2020/23, non-reelection of certificated employees. By unanimous vote, the board approved resolution 2019-2020/24, release of administrators for the 2019-2020 school year. Next, we have our student representative. Lauren, we also have a card for you from our last meeting that the board members and the superintendent signed congratulating you on being selected the student of the quarter for Marysville High School.
Thank you so much. Hello, everyone. So February has been a very busy month at MHS. At the beginning of this month, we had Kindness and Homecoming Week, which went really well. And last week, we had FFA Week, which consisted of dress-up days and lunchtime activities, such as a truck show and a cornhole tournament. Also, last Friday, our civics teacher, Mr. White, took his class to tour the state capitol in Sacramento. This week, we are hosting a PSAT for all freshmen and a SAT for juniors. Some exciting news that MHS would like to share is the boys' basketball, girls' basketball, soccer, and wrestling teams made it to the playoffs. Also, our academic decathlon team made it to state, and we are currently planning fun activities for the month of March. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have our presentations. Our first presentation is the Federal Program Monitoring, FPM Review. Ms. Larson?
Do you have a presentation?
Okay, my apologies. Sorry, I'm in here chatting and everything before it begins and forgot that I had handouts for you. So, we are thrilled to report, first of all, that our federal program monitoring review by the California Department of Ed is over, for the most part. So we have a little bit of cleanup, some resolution items that we are working on, but I'm not sure how, but we survived. So when our sites get picked, it's always a big lottery, and there's always lots of disappointment when you find out that your site is being looked at for FPM. And we have just always said in our district that FPM is a team sport, and it absolutely is a team sport. There are lots of folks, from teachers to district office folks sitting in here, that have all had a hand in our FPM review. We were picked for 6 different program instruments. The compensatory education is really that Title I mega item that crosses a lot of different aspects of education, and career technical education. The EL, again, a very comprehensive review that Lenny Tate took the lead on that. The Expanded Learning Program, which is really our after-school programs. Pete Pantoa was the lead there. PE, Amy Stratton took the lead. And then for Uniform Complaint Procedures, I had that one, CTE and CompEd. But again, it's not at all to say that there was not a whole team, an army of folks behind each of these torchbearers that were leading the charge in these specific areas. Those schools that were picked, Cedar Lane was picked, reviewed for Title I, for EL, after school programs, and uniform complaint. Johnson Park was looked at for Title I, EL, and after school programs. Yuba Gardens, again, Title I, EL, after school programs, PE, and uniform complaint. Lyndhurst High School was looked at for CTE, Marysville High School for CTE and PE, and then, oddly enough, Browns Valley was picked to be looked at for PE. So that was kind of one that was a little unexpected. And the other really beautiful thing about it was we did not have a high school that was picked in the whole comprehensive education or in EL. Again, the two really big, huge mega instruments that we have. So we're really happy to report, and we'll go through the report of findings here really quick, but we had 4 of those 6 programs that didn't have any findings at all. In fact, as a district, we only ended up with 5 findings, which is really amazing. And I know that many of the board members participated with us on the entrance meeting with the Department of Ed on a Monday, and then on that Friday came back for the exit meeting. So we're just going to hit the highlights now of the findings that we have, some of the preliminary work that's been done. But if you guys have any interest or desire in us taking a little bit deeper dive into those resolution action items, we would be happy to do it. And I'm probably not the best person to be standing up here talking about all of the hard work that a lot of other teammates have done to get with the resolution. So when we get to the end, just be thinking about that, and then we'll decide if you guys want us to come back and speak with a little more depth. The other thing, the whole start of our FPM review, and one of the things that we thought was so important to really showcase for the Department of Ed, is how our district is in transition. And there were some areas of transition that did show up during the review, but when we look at it, we have a new superintendent this year, a new chief business officer, a new executive director of student engagement. That's at the district level, in addition to Pete Pantoa, who is a brand new after-school coordinator. Then out at the school sites, 2 of the principals they selected were brand new as well. One brand new to being a principal, the other, this was his first time going through FPM, even though he served as a principal in another district before coming here, a high school principal. So going through the WASC program accreditation process is really similar to what we go through during an FPM. But I think the results really speak to the great cohesiveness of the district and also the district's willingness to take the review so seriously. It was on a few different occasions at the Department of Ed commented on how great our board has been and how wonderful it is to even see board members that are present and part of the conversation. So thank you all for helping us set this stage and showing the Department of Ed that we really are taking this as a learning opportunity and will address the issues that came up during the review. So if you look through your notifications of findings, on EL, the very first item there in EL03 goes into IEPs and some of the IEPs that they pulled not having the information the way the Department of Ed wanted to see it. So Student Services, Tony, Jessica, they have jumped on this, have already had a series of meetings. The three IEPs that were called out during the FPM process have already been, they have already been corrected. They've reached out to the SELPA. They work with the program that the SELPA provides to them, and the program itself wasn't updated with the way the Department of Ed wanted to see some EL scores reported, and so they're working with the SELPA to get that corrected. They said that their IEP correction documentation is all ready to be uploaded as soon as the CDE portal is provided. They have had a training with administrators and high school counselors already in February, on February 12th. They have a training for school psychologists and speech therapists on the 19th. And then a third training is scheduled for March 12th to help them walk through what the changes are and how to make sure that we are capturing EL data in an IEP correctly. So thanks, ladies. Lots of work there. Then the next one we had was on credentials, EL authorization, and Mr. Carrion Personnel is aware of that and working on a resolution there. Then EL 14 and 15 are pretty big types of items in regards to the designated and the EL instruction. So Ed Services also has met with the secondary principals and the counseling staffs. It really is an issue at the secondary level on both EL 14 and EL 15. I know that Mr. Greco also has a follow-up meeting with the reviewer for the EL item this next week. So we are well in the works. There will be some systemic changes that will need to happen in that regard in terms of how EL is delivered. But the reviewer from the Department of Ed was very comprehensive, walked us through, spent hours upon hours with Lenny after we would go through each of the days talking about these are the things that they were looking to see in very specific examples of what that looked like. So again, we felt like we had a really nice partnership with the Department of Ed in terms of help putting us on the right track. Then when we move on to physical education, again, we had a credentialing issue that was called out there for PE. So for PE, and again, we're working on that credentialing issue and putting a process in place. The Department of Ed gives us 45 days from the time that they leave, and that will be coming up the middle of next month. But they get and understand that not all of these all of these findings can be addressed and completely cleared inside of those 45 days. So I know Amy is working with the PE reviewer, and again, Rocco is working on the EL side to try to get a timeline together that really is more representative of what it will take for us to clear a few of the more difficult findings. And we do anticipate that some of the others will be marked off soon. So that is what I have and what I wanted to share with you. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. And again, if you would like other folks to come and present for you in terms of what's being done in their specific areas, I know they would be delighted to do it. Right?
Are there any questions or comments? I would like to say thank you again, Jamie, and I in the conference room. I see y'all are really hard at work already on the chalkboard in there, whiteboard, I guess, nowadays.
Yes.
But thank you for all that you're doing.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, one thing, as Jamie said, it was 95% of the items were without findings. So that was excellent news. And the way everybody worked together was phenomenal. Some of the findings are pretty heavy and are going to, with all that work that you're witnessing, and particularly in the high schools, the amount of effort that is being applied and the structural changes that are going to take place are going to be significant. So compliments to the effort and the gang tackling, and just understanding that we'll be talking about this ongoing for a while, and it's going to have major impact.
Thank you. Next presentation, we have Student Services, Mrs. Jessica Guth and her team.
Hello, good evening. My name is Jessica Guth. Most of you know me. I'm the Director of Program Services. Hopefully you were able to review the board report that I submitted, and I will be expanding on that data that I shared in this presentation. At the beginning of the year, Mr. Cena shared his goals, and I'd like to highlight where Student Services is growing around these goals, as well as serving all students every day in every way. So some of the programs and services that my department provides is the health services, speech and language, home hospital, 504 plans, and partnering with special education with Tony Vernier. So right now in health services, we have four nurses. Nurses, can you stand up, please? Thank you. I'm really proud of the work that our nurses are doing right now, and we've grown to four nurses because of the amount of work that they have serving 10,000 students. But among other things, they develop our health care plans, and they train our staff on proper health care procedures. They do all of the hearing and vision screenings throughout the district, as well as attending IEPs and 504s, and they do so much more. That doesn't even capture what they're doing. In addition to our nurses, we have health aides that do the daily diabetic and seizure monitoring. They are running around to at least 12 schools for our 24 students that have type 1 diabetes. They also support our immunization monitoring and reporting, which have constant updates in the law that we have to adhere to. And then they do the direct student care. They help with those boo-boos on the playgrounds and supporting the staff and relieving the secretaries of some of the burden. The next thing, I'm going to go through some of the projects that Health Services has done over the last few years. The last time I presented to you was 2017. So I want to talk about the importance of AEDs in schools. This was a big project that we took under. So basically, some of the things that drove us to make these decisions were these statistics that 7,000 children die from cardiac arrest each year. 2 in 50 high schools can expect a sudden cardiac arrest event each year. And the survival rate of students who suffer from cardiac arrest in schools with an AED is 70% compared to 8% of the overall population. So that, you know, emphasizes the importance. So we have AEDs in each of our schools. Our high schools have more than one. And this is just a picture of the AED at Kynoch School, so some of you probably have seen these around. But with the AEDs comes training. and support and management and understanding of how to use those in the case of an emergency. And so what we've done is we have gone and gotten our certificate to train staff. So that requires updating every 2 years. And since we got that certificate, our training team has taught 5 CPR AED classes in the last 18 months. So 116 district employees have been trained since the fall of 2018, and we're really proud of that. Another project that we have taken on is you approved the contract for the hearing screening van. This is through Center for Hearing Health. This is a picture of some kindergartners waiting to get screened. I don't know if you have seen this hearing van on campuses, but this has been a huge support to our department. And this is why, prior to getting this van, we spent 42 days with 3 nurses doing hearing and vision screenings, because they were meeting with each student one-on-one to do that, and that when you look at their daily rate, it cost us about $63,000 worth of their time. Since getting that van, we have narrowed it down to 20 days, and we only need 1 to 2 nurses each time. So that service contract is $15,000, but it really is a cost savings of $26,000, if that's how you want to compare it, or 22 more days of nurses serving students. Another new thing that our health services team has done is applied for vision vouchers. So through the National Association of School Nurses, we have been given 300 gift certificates for free eye exams and glasses for students who don't have vision insurance. So that's a huge plus for our community. And we have 11 local optometrists that accept those vouchers. So another area that we're working on that Gary emphasized in his goals were the community partnerships. These are all of the different organizations that we are collaborating with to ensure that we have that we're connected and gathering all of the resources that we can. So Family Soup is a huge partner in working with our special populations of students. They support our 504 process and helping parents advocate for needs in a way that's very collaborative. And I think overall this relationship avoids due process. I'm serving on Yuba County SELPA, the Community Advisory Committee, which is where parents and special education staff come together and make decisions for the community and, again, talk about resources. The dental van has a partnership with First 5 California. And then we are working with behavioral health for many things, for mental health and PEI services. Another huge community partnership we have is with Yuba County Health and Human Services. This is a picture of us with the public health nurses, one serious, one fun picture. We have quarterly meetings with them, and it helps us keep updated on what's happening in the greater community and also share our needs, which promotes them coming in and giving us resources directly to our school sites. And we have a new health officer, Dr. Liu, which I'm really excited about partnering with as well. So we also have here Rhonda Bowers. Rhonda, she is the coordinator of the Happy Tooth Mobile, and we are so lucky to have her because her energy and her ideas are amazing and wonderful for our students, and her true care and concern that she has for our students' health and access, all of the research that goes into the importance of dental care is huge. So, Rhonda, we're lucky to have you. And I included a letter from her, which was really nice in the report that I gave. So they give presentations to students, and they get really into it. And she wrote a book for the students, and it's really amazing and exciting to see all the creativity that goes into brushing your teeth. So thank you, Rhonda. It is important. So another department that I work with is speech and language services. We have speech therapists and SLIPAs, which are assistants to the speech therapists. And since I joined this team in 2016, I've really worked hard on just developing compliant practices and making sure that we are just well-staffed in serving the students in the best way we can. So one of the things we did was we had them attend a PLC conference when that came out with the school psychologists. And they have really learned and explored how to incorporate their role in the schools and provide early intervention and really partner with those teachers to identify students early and remediate their speech and language. And we're also working along with the FPM findings on accurately identifying our English learners. So we have a lot of work to do. So in 2017, we had 643 students, so we've grown to 680 students. We had 4 interns at that time. Right now, we don't have any interns, so we have more licensed speech therapists. We've added a couple retired therapists, some SLIPAs, and we've gotten our caseloads down to an average of 65. So they were at around 92 previously, and so I'm really proud of that because it's more manageable. But they have more direct contact with the licensed therapist, lower caseloads. We're more legally compliant, but we still need therapists because we now are trying to whittle away those contracts that we have. So this Thursday, I'm actually joining Fallon Woods at CSU Chico. She has a connection, and what she does is she offers a professor there to do a presentation or a training in one of the skills that the graduating class needs for an opportunity for me to go speak and recruit. So it's an exchange of service there, and so I get to go speak to 24 graduating speech therapists and promote our district there. So I'm excited to do that on Thursday. So we also have a presence on the student attendance review board. In the last few years, we've added a school nurse to that process with Jolie, and it's been really beneficial to partner with Jolie's department and try and help students with chronic absenteeism as related to their health needs. We're also present at the health and wellness fair, the nutrition fair that Nutrition Services does. The last 2 years we've done mindfulness for the students. We're supporting the preschool inclusion process. Always supporting SSTs, IEPs, 504s, the PLC process. We're having monthly staff meetings and weekly collaboration. So those are all the opportunities that we're coming together. So finally, I just want to say thank you to all of you for your support. We can't do any of this work without you and your participation. So it definitely has made a difference to our staff, students, and families. So thank you. And that's it.
Thank you. Any comments or questions from board members? Mr. Fleury?
I'll tell you, the job is becoming a lot harder. I remember when at Marysville High School here, we had 2 nurses, and all they did was deal with stomach aches. Mm-hmm. Now, when the diabetes, because I have diabetes, I know it's very hard. And I know you've got them scattered through the district, and you've got a lot of different problems that we never had years ago. And I think it's getting worse. And you do a great job with your staff. You make a good team to take care of our kids.
Thank you.
I would just like to say thank you also to you and your staff for bringing the wellness to our children to allow them to want to learn. So that's so important. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Next, we're going to move into business services number 2, the MOU with Yuba Sutter Regional Arts Council. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the MOU with the Yuba Sutter Regional Arts Council to use vacant MJUSD land on Broadway near Feather River Boulevard for the purpose of creating a Marysville Assembly Center memorial site. So when Mr. Reed and I had our pre-meeting at the card aisle in the Walmart, I told him that he would not need to make a presentation tonight. But I appreciate you coming and just being here so we could introduce you. And, you know, if there was any specific questions about it, that you would be here to be able to answer. Looks like Mrs. Lossing's coming to the rescue, though.
Actually, I was just here to say we're fortunate to have Mr. David Reed representing the Yuba Sutter Regional Arts Council here to describe the memorial and the purpose for it. So thank you.
Okay.
And if I may, President Rasmussen and members of the board and staff, thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak for a couple of minutes. I'm a little shy, but I'll press on. Next time I'll bring the full 50-slide presentation about the project. But while I have the opportunity, I just want to thank the district. We have many ongoing collaborations and have had for years, not just the project at hand today. I just want to, you know, point out that our Scholastic Art and Writing Awards programs with the high schools, the Poetry Out Loud program that we've been running for many years, the current Yuba Water Agency that we program that we brought into this room a couple of months ago is now we're actually sending artists and naturalists into second and third grade classrooms throughout the district and the entire county. And just all these wonderful ways that we try to help reinforce what your teachers are doing in the classrooms. We know it's, you know, hey, I've been a long-term sub, and that's as close as I've gotten to the full-time teaching load, and I know it's tough. So we respect that and try to support in any way that we can. So. And I should also point out that the Arts Educator of the Year last year was none other than Joe Lloyd, Marysville High School art teacher. And we're getting ready to take his students on a field trip to the Crocker Museum in April that's being funded by another one of the grants that we've received. But just very briefly, the matter at hand, helping to create the memorial site at the location, or actually across the street from the original location, of the Arboga Assembly Center, which in the 30s was a migrant farm workers camp. It was converted in 1942 as a result of the signing of Executive Order 9066 to an assembly center, as they were called, as the permanent internment camps were being built. Over the last couple of years, because of several projects, I've gotten to know the Japanese American Citizens League folks and, of course, a lot of our local Yuba County historians and the commission that I've worked with. And I'd heard the story about how 10 years ago the JACL had a memo of understanding with the district to do something at that site, but due to lack of funding and other concerns, nothing ever happened. We were fortunate to receive a grant from the California State Library, which conveniently has a civil liberties grant program to commemorate those experiences of Japanese Americans who were deprived of their civil liberties during that period of time. So, and I think as the description and the agenda says, this is relatively non-invasive. We're not creating any structures. It's a couple of silhouettes kind of echoing the outline of the barracks that were there. Some information murals, some barbed wire to kind of try to create that sense of what occurred there and to create a destination in Yuba County that folks can go to and another historic site for folks to visit. So we appreciate your consideration of our request. And again, thanks to all the staff who have helped get us to this point. Any questions on the project that I can help with? Or
no questions or comments? Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion approved by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7 yes.
Thank you. I'll report back to you as we make progress, and once the project is completed, come in and give you a little PowerPoint.
Thank you for all that you do, Mr. Reed.
Thanks so much.
Comments from board members. Mr. Allison. Mr. Boom. Mr. Fleury.
Last week we went to the dinner where they recognized them, I think five from our district, and I understand from Jolie that we had 38 members of our staff that came there, and one of the schools mentioned, said, boy, your staff is really upbeat. And it was an upbeat time to recognize people for what they've done. And it was really, we were well represented by the board and by the staff. And we just had a great time. Also, today, one of the parts about being a board member, you get to go to visit the schools. And we did the spelling bee at Johnson Park, myself, Randy, and Sheriff Anderson. And it was just a great event. And to watch the kids, how well-behaved they were, was number one. The atmosphere, you can see, was very good. And one thing I noticed when the kids came to the podium, and the spellmaster would say, do you want to some additional information? And every kid said, no, thank you. And that was, it tells a lot about the school. So that was very good. And Thursday, some of us are planning to visit McKinney. And again, that's the positive part about being on the board, getting out into schools and seeing all the positive things.
Thank you. Mr. Crawford.
Just quickly, I'd like, and I think I reiterated this last year at approximately the same time. I think it was about 7 or 8 years ago, Mr. Fleury, during budget cuts, much to your chagrin and mine, ROTC was being canceled. And I'm not sure the time frame, but he took it to heart especially, and I'm here to give him credit because I was amazed at the Buckeye Parade 2 years ago. This year, Jim, and I want to thank you again, it was at least 50 strong. It was the most incredible sight. ROTC is completely back. He had to fight through all the arguments of the military couldn't provide a officer. Lyndhurst, I wasn't ready to accept it all. He didn't take that for a no for an answer. And now it's back and flourishing. And another thing I've noticed, and it's all good, music in our schools was non-existent due to budget cuts, once again, way back then. Rotary Club from Marysville and Yuba City jumped in, supplied at Kynock, violins, instruments. Even Mrs. Hasty, Brent Hasty's wife, taught half there and half at another school. Now it's extended music in our schools, which I'm a big fan of, too. Our middle schools and our high schools. It's nice to see our high schools back in the parades, Kovalod back in the parade. It's just nice to see those things that wasn't teaching to the test or anything else, just things that should have never been eliminated, in my opinion, Mr. Fleury's ROTC, and music in our schools. And I'm happy to report they are back. Thank you.
Mr. Davis.
The only thing I wanted to bring up was, again, looking at some of the donations that have been received by the district. And Yuba River Endowment has been steadfast in supporting our FFA program. And I was happy to see that Lyndhurst and South Lyndhurst have also been awarded a significant amount of funds to carry out that program. And I really want to express our thanks to that group and other folks that are out there that are donating to the district in many different ways. Thank you.
Ms. Scott. Okay. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Good evening. Angela Stegall, President for the Marysville Unified Teachers Association. I have quite a bit of info for you this evening. There's an item on the agenda later on that is going to be the major focus of the comments I have for you this evening. First off, before I get to the slides presentation, Vice President Lori Whitmore is bringing around a BENS that I have for you, a Budget Essentials for Negotiations, a one-page document. And originally, with the slide presentation, I thought we would just go through it, but then decided that it might be helpful also if you just had kind of a one sheet, one thing you could look at to kind of sum it all up. And so the paper that Lori just handed to you, if you want to take a look at it real quick, I will walk you through just a few pieces of information. First of all, if you look in columns B and C there, and you'll notice that it says the districts in array 11. For a number of years at the bargaining table, and even here when we present to the board, the union has kind of taken a hit on the fact that we use a state average. And so we have always been urged to use districts that are like-sized, use unified districts, and so we did in this instance, per the request and the urging that we have had. And so the 11 districts that are mentioned on there are the 11 districts that are closest to us that are also unified districts, and their ADA is close to ours. And when I get to the slides, you'll see what unified districts those are. But then when you get to D and E columns, those are Marysville Joint Unified. And then when you get to columns F and G, that's the variance or the difference. And you'll see it in dollars per ADA and percent. So if you look at line 11, that's total revenues. And so if you look at B and C there, and then if you scoot on over to D, you will notice that we have more revenues than our comparables there. And then if you scoot on over to F and G, you'll notice what the dollar amount and the percent difference is there. About 14%. So doing pretty decent there. If you skip down to line 15 on that page, you'll see total available funds. Again, if you look at column B versus column D, so Marysville Joint Unified versus 11 districts that are comparable to us, you will notice that we have significantly more. And that's because we keep more. You'll notice that's a significant difference of 18.33%. And then if you go down to line 17, which is bargaining unit salaries, you'll notice that our comparables have about 37.7% there. So 37.7% goes for their bargaining unit salaries. If you go over to Marysville Joint Unified, you'll notice that we're just a little over 32%. That's the only one where we're actually lower. Because if you keep going over, if you keep going down on that, you'll see admin salaries, classified salaries, you'll notice that Marysville Joint Unified is higher than the comparables. But when it comes to the certificated staff, we certainly are not. And you'll notice that when you go over to G, we are just over 5.5% less than districts that are comparable to us. And then if you'll scoot down even further, line 35 is the reserve. And if you'll notice, the comparable districts are 3%, as is Marysville Joint Unified 3%. And then line 39 is where we have our unrestricted total reserves. And so other districts comparable, 16.13%. If you take out the 3%, then that still leaves them 13. And then Marysville Joint Unified is 26.93, just under 27%. And so with a 3% reserve out, that's still 24%. It seems to me, and it seems to this union, that we do not have a need for a higher reserve requirement. We have a reserve requirement of 3%. We are well above it. We have been, we continue to be, and I would venture a guess that we always will be. And so with that being said, as I mentioned, basically kind of a summary of, now we will scoot over to some slides that I have for you. And when we're comparing Marysville Joint Unified, just a couple of things to keep in mind. That I had CTA help me gather the info for this, and oftentimes we're asked where we get our numbers from. And so just like we often ask the district, where do your numbers come from? I thought it would be beneficial to let you know right off the bat where our numbers come from. They come from the DAT files for the 2018-19 unaudited actuals and the 2019-20 budget. that was provided to MJUS, provided by MJUSD to MUTA. So these slides are going to compare MJUSD to itself since 2014-15. And so the first five bars are going to represent unaudited actuals. Those are real amounts. And then the last bar is going to represent the budget, which, of course, we call a guess. It's not a real number as of yet because we're not at the end of the year. So with our budget reserves, if you notice, and even for people in the back who can't see what those numbers say at the very top of that, you can notice that that orange bar keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so this year is no different. We go from 2.5 up to 3 to 3, almost 3.3, almost 3.5, 3.7 plus, and almost to 4 now. And that's our budget reserve. If you look at budget reserve as a percent of total outgo, we're sitting right around our 3% consistently over time. If you start looking at the total unrestricted ending balance, so this is your Fund 1 plus Fund 17, those numbers still are on the uptick, the upswing. And if you continue through as far as percent of total outgo, our reserve is continuing to grow. And then if you look at all funds' total balances, and for some this may be hard to see, and some of you may realize that the colors of this probably are not a mistake. The Marysville High School colors are going to carry through the MUTA presentation even. The all funds' total balances, those numbers still continue to trend upward. And as we have our all funds' total balances and the percent of total outgo, again, numbers are increasing. And if you have questions, feel free to stop me anytime. I'm going to try to keep going through this because I know you have an agenda and I know we have other people who want to speak tonight. If you look at our total unrestricted ending balance, and this is minus the reserve for economic uncertainty, it's quite a difference from 2014-15 to 2018-19, where we are dealing with real numbers there. And then we still have the budget for this year, which is still looking up. And we have percent of outgo, which is also still increasing. And so with comparable districts, we, again, CTA used the DAT file, the unaudited actuals, that was provided by Marysville Joint Unified, and we are comparing districts in 2018-19. The districts chosen were from across the state, but they are all unified school districts, and they're within 480A of Marysville Joint Unified. We did also add Yuba City and Chico as comparables, because even though they're larger, they're the closest to us in size from neighboring counties, and oftentimes they are included in our comparables from, for lack of a better term, both sides of the table. MJUSD is the green bar in each graph. So, again, if you look at certificated bargaining unit salaries and the percent of total outgo, Arcadia sits a little over 44%. And then it ticks down to Chico, just under 38. And then we come over a little further and a little further and a little further. And then you hit Marysville Joint Unified at 32.3. If we look at administrator salaries as a percent of total outgo, we're sitting about in the middle at about 5.55%. Could explain why we get administrators from Yuba City once in a while if you look at that graph. The classified bargaining unit salaries as the percent of total outgo are pretty impressive. 17.46 at Monterey Peninsula and Marysville Joint Unified right at 14.7. But again, if you'll notice, those bars are way further over to the upside than teachers, which are down at the very bottom. And then we have the total salary and benefit cost, the percent of total outgo. We hear an awful lot about the fact that we have so much of the budget goes to salaries and benefits. Apparently, we are no different, except for the fact that a number of districts are significantly more than we are. Chico Unified is just over 84%, and Marysville is just under 75%. The ending balance percent of total outgo, our ending balance is over 28% of our total outgo. Arcadia has got us beat, though, at 45.6. But most of the other districts are below us, including Chico Unified at just over 16.5%. But if you look at the reserve standard percent of total outgo, this is where we are all the same. We are all 3%. If you look at their board policies, if you look at what they're doing, they are 3%. State mandated. And our unrestricted total reserves, we are significantly higher than our neighbors across the bridge. We're at 26.93 and Yuba City's at 11.3. And in conclusion, there are a number of things on this slide, but the main thing is our teachers here want to be respected and paid like other sizes, like other unified school districts across the state. We do not see a need to increase reserves, a reserve requirement at this point in time. We don't need to hoard our reserves. And so instead of spending more time on this slide, most of you know, you saw me at the last board meeting, I sat during the presentation on reserves and dutifully took notes. If any of you can read them, you probably deserve a medal of some kind or an award. I will not pledge any kind of dignity to my handwriting. My dad says I should be a doctor in my next life. But I got those notes together while I was working on this presentation. And I just wanted to let the board know that I listened very intently to the presentation at the last board meeting regarding the idea or the concept of increasing the minimum reserve requirement. And I listened intently for a number of reasons, not just because I'm president, not just because I'm on bargaining, and not just because I happen to be a teacher in this district. But I also listened intently because, as a couple of board members acknowledged, it was one of the first, not the first, but one of the first presentations by our new business services person, Penny. And so I had not heard Ms. Lossing speak a great deal. Unfortunately, I'd had to miss a couple pieces and parts of board meetings. So I was listening very intently because we all have different styles and we all have different ways we present information. And I took copious notes so that I could make sure that I could relay to the board some of the ideas that were going through my head at the time. Because it's hard for me 2 days later to think about what I was thinking 2 days before. That's why I can't remember what I had for dinner yesterday. May have been nothing at this point. But during that, I came away with a number of issues and concerns that I really hope that the board will listen to. And I hope that you will act on this appropriately this evening. Because the teachers and the students and the parents of this community need your help in this regard. One of the things that I noticed is that there is a major difference between an average reserve level and a common standard. There was an implication throughout the presentation and even listed on the board agenda tonight about adopting a common standard. And there's almost this implication that if the district were to do anything different than adopt the 17% standard, that somehow you would be doing something irresponsible. Standard leads, there's very different connotations that go along with the standard versus an average. With a standard, I mean, that kind of makes you think about the fact that, well, gee, you know, is everybody doing it? Shouldn't we? Kind of like our parents tell us, if so-and-so jumped off the bridge, would you? And so that's kind of what the common standard leads us to believe, that if we don't do something, somehow we're errant. And I will tell you that I can't find this common standard. I've contacted CTA, and I can't find where this comes up. And I'm sure that it's going to be a question later on during the public hearing. But I will tell you that all I can find right now, even going through the slides and even listening to the board meeting again, the only thing I can find is that it was merely an average. And there's a very distinct difference between an average and a common standard. Another major sticking point that really shocked me at the last board meeting was information about the COPS payments. For at least the last 2 or 3 years, the district has used these looming loan payments as a reason to limit salary increases to teachers. Teachers have been denied COLA over and over again, due in large part to the COPS payments. I can't tell you how many times in my bargaining notes you will find COPS, and we are not talking about law enforcement at the bargaining table. We are talking about these loan payments that we hear about again and again at the table. Now we are told, well, and we were told over and over again, that they could not be refinanced, that we were just stuck with these. And so you've had teachers in this district for at least the last couple of years take less in their settlement agreements because they were trying to help the district out in this. And now we find out 2 weeks ago that all of a sudden it's mentioned that, oh, hey, maybe those could be refinanced. We've been told they could not. And so at this point in time, this is quite a surprise. And I think it's interesting tonight that when you look at the agenda for tonight's meeting, you're supposed to vote on this reserve requirement and then hear about the possibility of refinancing or refunding the COPS payments. Kind of seems like we're proverbially putting the cart before the horse. I do think the district needs a lot more information before they make a decision on this. And I definitely think that there are parents and community members and teachers in this district that need this information a great deal also before you make this decision. The COPS payments make it absolutely even more unbelievable that the district would so drastically increase their reserves right now. It appears the COP payments will hang over the bargaining table for at least the next 20 years, according to the slides, especially if the board approves this enormous increase to the reserves tonight. If the board approves the 17% reserves, along with this COPS issue, the district might as well just post in bold letters on our website so that all prospective teachers know that their wages are going to remain stagnant for at least the next 20 years, 2 decades. So while healthcare costs, cost of living, everything else will continue to rise, their wages will not. This could be a rough sell, and it's going to do very little, if nothing, to assist with hiring teachers during this intense teacher shortage. Increasing the reserve requirement will also be a neon sign to teachers currently working in this district. It will be painfully obvious to teachers that this is an effort to hoard money and take it or keep it off the table and away from students, programs, classrooms, and yes, teachers. Teachers will again feel as if their extraordinarily hard work and their tireless efforts for this district and for their students are all for naught and ignored by this board. I would urge the board, please do not ignore your teachers tonight. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association Number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees.
Hello and good evening. So usually we get up and we do kudos here at this time, and so today I would just like to give a kudo to Tuesday for not being Monday, and we look forward to meeting Friday. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Supervisory unit. I do have some comment cards here. I just want to double check to make sure these cards want to be heard during the public hearing. Is that correct? They're not truly public. Okay. So with that, we have no public comment cards. Next, we have the superintendent's report. Mr. Cena.
Okay. Yeah. Together, serving every student every day in every way. As we turn the calendar and move toward March, just some coming attractions in terms of together. First of all, the Yuba Water Agency. We've seen evidence this year at board meetings, and all board members have heard of what's happened. In fact, tonight, David Reed mentioned that in grades 2 and 3, there's an art and science integrated program. All of this is helping to teach and supplement the next generation science standards. So grades 2 through 3 in Marysville Joint and in districts throughout Yuba County is being done. In grade 4, we know about the Salmon Run and the South Yuba River Citizens League, and we've heard that for many of students, some have called that the best day of their lives, certainly the best field trip that they've had. Grade 5, we have classrooms raising steelhead and salmon in their classrooms, and grade 6 with water wizards learning about the water shed and the water tables. And beyond that, the Yuba Water Agency has steadfastly since this summer developed both a curriculum committee and also an education center building construction group. And on March 17th this year, at 9 a.m. at the government center, the committees are going to report on their progress so far. And having heard previews to that, it's really exciting to see the level of integration and resource and commitment that's being put into this. Next generation science standards, grades K through 12, supplementing materials and curriculum for all grade levels in a high quality way. In addition, Yuba Water Agency is moving forward. We will hear and we're attending meetings about the water projects that they're working on, replacing faucets and fixtures in the district, with the idea or the concept, the goal of saving district tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars in order to put that money toward students and programs. Together, serving every student every day in every way. Also, March 12th, we have some district leaders that are meeting with the community task force, namely with Sam from Sanger. He's the individual who helped rally community groups in Sanger, a district with demographics similar to ours, who made a great growth in academic performance and behavior, historic growth, and what stimulated that. And what's charging that is we have groups of community members who want to serve as mentors and want to serve. They want to hear what the needs are of our district in order to supply that energy and resource. So much of this comes down to what every human being wants and needs is somebody to listen to us. No matter who we are, no matter how successful we are in school or in life. Also with the Yuba County Office of Ed, we heard a presentation tonight. We were talking about a partnership with them. We're working on grants for a family resource center, behavior health, a mental health grant. Again, an emphasis on what we can do to identify student needs and organize our resources and gang tackle toward meeting those needs. In terms of stakeholders, all of us in every role in the district, the LCAP is a vehicle for that. So far, we've had over 400 people reply to the survey in English and in Spanish. The other night at the DLAC meeting and at the DAC meeting, there was input from community. There'll be four public forums through the process, and also our district LCAP team will be meeting in March and in April. And in terms of that process, the resources driving this support is a budget. And so all these meetings and discussions and presentations on the structured budget deficit and the reserves and the COPS tonight and the LCAP video are all designed to help educate all of us so that we're all on the same page and we understand, we share the same nomenclature, and we understand what the terms are with the goal that we can work together and we all know we're apples to apples and we are able to engage in problem solving and how to get resources to help students with prioritized and identified needs. So that we can do what's best for students. The other piece in another example just recently and together, serving every student every day in every way, is on January 10th, we had 10 districts, superintendents from surrounding districts met. There were five from Yuba County, five from Sutter County, and all of those districts, well, not all of them participate in a discussion, and all of the Yuba County districts are in the process of adopting the calendar, the school calendar that the board approved at the last meeting, which allows all of the different agencies to be on the same or incredibly similar schedules, which helps everybody. And so it was good that people put their egos and agenda to the side and worked to problem solve so that together We can serve every student every day in every way at MJOSD, Yuba County, and in Sutter County. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have under Superintendent the approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of February 11th, 2020. Is there any discussion regarding those minutes? If not, is there a motion? We have a motion to approve by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Any abstentions? Mrs. Scott abstains. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that a board member would like to have pulled? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion approved by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Boom. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7 yes. Under new business, page 8, Personnel Services, Resolution 2019-20/25. Elimination of classified staff due to elimination of particular kinds of service. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution entitled Elimination of Classified Staff Due to Elimination of Particular Kinds of Service, PKS. Mr. Carrion?
Sorry about that. Thank you, Mr. President. This particular agenda item deals with the elimination of classified staff, as you mentioned, and these recommended positions to be cut are mostly at an abundance of caution. I will note that the total number of FTEs identified by this resolution are fewer than in years past, which is comforting. And to the extent that when budgets are known and school site councils have had an opportunity to review and consider recommendations by site principals, it's very likely that most, if not all, of these employees affected by these cuts will be returned. In fact, I could comfortably predict that in the late summer, early fall, we'll be looking for additional levels of service because of the need to provide intervention support and other direct services to students. All of that said, we will seek to ensure that employees are notified according to the state timelines and make sure that notices are distributed accordingly. And more importantly, as soon as we know, we'll rescind notices to those impacted employees. But at this particular time, at an abundance of caution, we're asking that the board consider and approve this resolution in order to distribute notices in accordance with statutory timelines.
Thank you, Mr. Carrion. Any discussion? Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Boom. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Well, Mr. Allison is no. Motion carries 6-1. Under Nutritional Services, Resolution 2019-20/26, National School Breakfast Week. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution proclaiming March 2 through 6 as the National School Breakfast Week. Mrs. Watson?
Good evening. So this is a resolution to just recognize the day, or the week, excuse me, and it's a national celebration to recognize school breakfast. And just a couple stats for you. We are serving over 5,000 breakfasts every day in our district, and it's still free. for all kids, and many schools have two opportunities for students to have breakfast either before the bell in the cafeteria and then again, you know, at recess or at the nutrition break for the intermediate and high schools.
Thank you. Any questions? Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion approved by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Scott. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7 yes. Purchasing Department. Number one, Resolution 2019-20/27. Purchase school buses. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution to purchase school buses through a current government award contract. Hemet Unified School District to Bus West Incorporated on 7/16/19, bid number 061719. Hi.
Good evening. So this contract is actually to replace an expired contract that currently went out this past summer. This one will actually help us, give us another tool to purchase our larger school buses that we've been purchasing our Thomas built for the past 10 years or so, and it'll keep the continuity within the fleet.
Thank you, Mr. Horn. When I looked up, I was expecting Mr. Taylor. Sorry.
He wanted to join, though. I can handle it.
Is there any discussion? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7 yes. Thank you. Business services number one, board policy 3100, budget. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing regarding the revisions to board policy 3100, budget. The public hearing is now open. We do have three cards that I think we'll start with. Mrs. Whitmore?
Hi, I'm Lori Whitmore from Lyndhurst High School, and I'm also with MUTA. I am here to talk to you about this budget reserve revision because I think it's an important issue that not enough people have information about. And so just as a general statement, I think it's a huge jump to go from a 3% reserve to a 17% reserve. You're talking about a large amount of funds, and I don't think that there's enough information out for people to be able to either agree or disagree with the idea of increasing that reserve. In working with the CTA staff, we were not able to find other districts that have a 17% reserve, and we kind of are matched with schools of equal size, so it seems maybe uncalled for to increase it by that much at this point. Taxpayers really are not trying to fund a district savings account. The state has a recommendation of 3% for a reason. And holding back funds from the students that are currently in our schools is, in my opinion, the wrong thing to do, because that money was collected for students that are currently in our classroom, not for the future, which I understand is the purpose behind trying to save more money, but for those students that are right now in our classrooms. And so reserving that money for later is depriving our current students of those resources. Basically, you know, Mr. Cena, you said that we're working on serving every student every day and in every way, and every day is today. Every day is not, you know, a couple years in the future when we have other things that might happen, but those funds need to go for those students that are there today. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like just to get a point of clarification. Maybe I'm going back to Lisa again. So in a public hearing, are we still governed by a 3-minute for comments, or Jeff? It's
no. If they discuss agenda item,
right.
You
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Boom. So, Hector, we won't need to do that. Lori, do you want to talk longer? Okay. Next, we have Sandra Kitchens.
Hello, my name is Sandra Kitchens, and I'm a third grade teacher at Cedar Lane Elementary. And it just amazes me to go from the 3% that is required up to the 17%, which is more than five times as much. When we have a school that we closed 12 years ago with a promise that we would build another school, hasn't shown up yet, I can understand why our constituents are not wanting to fund other measures for schools when you don't follow through with things you've promised. And so if we have those budget shortfalls in the future, we could see possibly if we have that 17% in reserve that can't be touched, I'd hate to see ROTC, the music in our schools, the PE that we were getting right now, disappear because we can't fund it. So that's one reason I don't think we should do this at this time.
Thank you. Amanda Bowman.
Good evening. My name is Amanda Bowman. I'm a special education teacher at Yuba Gardens. I actually started teaching with Mr. Allison. Hello. My concern about 17% is what it does to the students that we currently have sitting in our classrooms. YG has a problem, and I think throughout our district, but I can speak directly to YG. We have an illiteracy problem. We have students who are lacking reading skills. We need to improve the reading ability of our students. And I'm on site council, and we're talking about what can we do and how do we do this? Well, we need help from our board. We need to talk about what other supports. Where do we use the money that's been given to us for these students right now to help our students that I'm sending to high school in how many months who read at the fourth or fifth grade level? It's a problem. It's a major problem specifically for us. And I have a feeling the other middle schools are feeling the same crunch, right? So 17% being set aside at this time is causing a deficit to our students. It's causing us to exit students out of high school, graduate them unprepared to read basic materials. That's part of it. And I loved what Mr. Cena said. We need to get on the same page. Why make a decision tonight regarding a 17%? The money's not going anywhere right now. So let's hold on to it for a while, discuss where the money does need to go. What is the plan? We can't decide on a reserve till we know what we have to do. In the middle of home repairs, right? I'm not going to go spend a whole bunch of money on something until I have a good plan, or put a whole bunch of money in the bank that I can't get to until I know if my bathroom will ever get fixed. Hopefully this weekend. But there's no reason to make a decision this evening. It may need to happen. I truly don't know. That's definitely not my area. But tonight is probably rushing it a little bit. Let's get on the same page, like you just said, and see if we can come up with a better plan for all of our students. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Any?
Sure.
So, Angela, could you go ahead and just state your name again for us?
I will. Angela Stiegel, president for the Marysville Unified Teachers Association. I also teach at Marysville High School, so it's going to be a long walk back to my classroom after this meeting. I thought I was all done, and I received a text message from a member who is unable to make it tonight because she is horribly ill, but she wanted me to make sure that you were aware of her thoughts for the evening. And it was actually something I probably should have thought of myself a long time ago. She brought up the idea that teachers, people associated with schools, even superintendents, secretaries, bus drivers, have all been out pounding the pavement for weeks now to get people to sign on for the Schools and Communities First initiative. And that initiative, if placed on the ballot, will bring much-needed funds to not just schools, but communities. But we have been, in trying to get this through, we have had site visits that have been going on so that teachers and school personnel know exactly what's going on with the Schools and Communities First initiative. And I think it was about a week and a half or so ago, the numbers have come out as far as what school districts would be looking at as far as if this was passed. If the Schools and Communities First initiative is passed, Marysville Joint Unified is looking at $6.8 million from that, not to mention what Marysville and Yuba County will receive as a community for things like homeless services and clinics and roads. But that money that is coming to the schools is meant for students and teachers and classrooms and programs. And the teacher that texted me said that she feels like the timing of this is suspect. She mentioned that it seems to her like the school district has realized they're about to see another almost $7 million and that now this is a money grab, was her term, that now instead of holding 3% of it back, which would be, oh, geez, I wish I could do math tonight. This is so wrong. I'm going to guess somewhere around $300,000 or $400,000, something. I'm going to carry the... So at 17, that's why I teach English and history, not math. Every math teacher that's going to hear this is going to email me and be so disappointed. But she mentioned the fact that it becomes quite significant. The difference between 3% of $6.8 million and 17%, I think, regardless of how well you know numbers, is quite significant. And she feels like it's not a mistake that this is happening when we are so close to getting this on the ballot. And so I thought I would let you know that because it did speak to what I had mentioned earlier, that you have teachers who are looking to use the school board to make a decision on this tonight that is going to show some understanding and respect for the ideas that the teachers have here and the fact that they just don't see that at this point in time an increase to a required 17% reserve is necessary. And I will also apologize to Mr. Boom for not being able to figure out the math off the top of my head either. Somebody who taught econ, I should be able to do that. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Angela, is that a statewide initiative they're talking about?
Yeah. It is. Yeah. Speaking of which, if you would like to sign on.
Funded by?
So.
Funded by what?
Funded by, they want to close the very significant corporate loophole where you have places like Disneyland that are paying way less in property taxes than you and I are. And so within that, that's how they will fund that and bring that money in. And one of the things that a number of us from MUTA, before we would even sign on to this, when we heard about it, back in September, is we had waited as even a local and as executive board members to sign on with the Schools and Communities First because we wanted to see the language that was going to come out on how they were going to deal with ag land and with agricultural properties. And they are actually exempt. And so now it's a matter of we're looking at major multi-billion dollar corporations that it's about time they pay their fair share. You and I do. And so it's about time they do as well. And so that's a hefty chunk of change that Marysville Joint Unified will be looking at if this passes.
Thank
right
you.
Now we have to get it qualified for the ballot. And so that takes over 1 million signatures, I believe it is. And so CTA, like our CTA staff person, Tamara Connery, was who was speaking back there a minute ago, she mentioned the fact that it's a number of groups. There are even, I have friends of mine at the Sheriff's Department that are collecting signatures as well. The police department here has also been doing that. Nurses, clinicians are also all signing on because it is about schools and communities. And so you will see money not just come to Marysville Joint Unified, but also the city of Marysville and the community of Yuba County. So it could be really beneficial to all of us. Thank you. Sorry, anything else before I go? I don't want to come back. Don't take it personally. Thank you so much.
Hi. I didn't fill out a card. My name is Linda Strang, and I think we need to take a minute and think. Marysville Joint Unified School District is not a person that needs to save for their retirement, nor is it a business for profit. We have one job, and that job is to educate children. So we should use the money that's given to us for that task and not increase that minimum amount.
Thank you.
Do we have any other comments?
Was, Penny, were you going to go through this tonight or this reserved discussion or not? Yeah, that was the prior one. Okay, we're not going. Okay, then one of my questions to you would be that we already have over 17% reserve. You're not talking about adding additional funds to what we already have. You're talking about raising the level, calling it 17%, but we already have the 17%. We're not taking more money and putting it into this.
No.
I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of confusion in this room of what's going on and what's taking place. And I don't think that people understand. I think they're thinking that you're taking the 3% reserve and make it a 17% reserve, so you're taking 14% and adding on top of that out of funds that, out of this year's budget or next year's budget or, you know, wherever those funds are coming from. Those funds are already in the reserve. But my other concern is, I mean, we build that reserve off of budget savings year after year, and it's money that can be used for, you know, things such as when Lyndhurst High School's air conditioning went down. If we have years where we're looking at budget deficits and possibly run the district for a couple of months instead of laying people off, I understand that. But is it something that other districts do? They have a minimum reserve of that high? Or, I mean, if we do have a reserve that high, then how do we refund that reserve once we spend some of those funds, say, for an emergency situation?
No, I believe different school districts have different board policy amounts of reserve level. The way, if we go below the 17%, there's various ways to replenish the reserve. Basically, having a strong reserve allows us the opportunity to have time if there are unforeseen revenue deficits or unpredicted expense increases. If we have a solid reserve at a good level, then we have maybe a year to plan what is the best way to bring our budget back into balance. When you have a low reserve, then you have to act immediately, and that's when programs can get cut quickly. A larger reserve protects programs. Another way, what I saw when I came to Marysville Joint Unified was looking at the multi-year projection at first interim. And remember that our multi-year projection is the current year and the subsequent 2 years of projected finances. And that's what the County Office of Education, which is an oversight for our budget, that's one of their main duties, is school district budget oversight, as well as, lost my train of thought. So the multi-year projection, so they look at that, and I lost my train of thought. Where was I going with this? So what I saw with that multi-year projection, I'm sorry, was a declining reserve. And then I recognized that we do have the COPS, the Certificates of Participation payments, a new payment coming up in 2023 of a substantial amount. And actually the current year and subsequent 2 years doesn't even pick up that additional expense. So I'm seeing a declining reserve, and then I go immediately, well, what is our board policy for our reserve? And I see that it doesn't really define any amount other than the state minimum of 3%. But I'm sure that most districts, if they were at a 3% reserve, they would be in a qualified or negative financial position, which, you know, comes with a host of other issues. So as I prepared information to talk about the reserves and the need for us to determine a level as we see this decline, where do we want to have our minimum reserve level be? And at this point, we can, you know, like you said, Mr. Boom, that it is above that. I believe it's projected for 20% at the end of this year. So we need to determine where we want our reserve level to be so that as we see a decline and we know we have a structural deficit, as we want to balance our budget, where is it that we need to be? So that will help us determine how to balance our budget if we see where that reserve level, where it's determined to be, and then as we project below that, what's that difference that we need to make budget adjustments to balance? So it's kind of part of that process of balancing our budget is we have to have a level of where do we want to be and not go below, and then from there, we know what we need to do to balance. Does that make sense?
Now I have a quick question. Now I understand why we're doing this and why we talked about doing this, and because we have so many expenses that, like the PERS and STIRS and all kinds of things that are going to be costing us a lot more over the next few years, plus loans that we have to pay back and things like that. And I understand that the state asks us to keep a 3% reserve. And I understand, you know, it's good to have more. But I'm trying to understand, okay, if we have a 17% reserve, what if something happens, you know, to the district where we suddenly need the money? Now, if we go below 3%, when it was 3%, I understand, you know, the state kicks gears in and all kinds of things start happening, you know, and, you know, some of it is really bad. Now, if we go below 17% and we pass this, and this is just board policy,
mm-hmm.
Let's say we suddenly have to go below 17% for whatever reason.
Right.
You know how mute it is. You know, I'm just kidding. And so what happens then? Can we go below reserves? Is it?
Yes, that would be our indicator that our budget needs to be balanced and we have an amount to as a target of where to go to get back in balance and to build that reserve. And it's always the board's decision on the manner we do that. There are a few ways. One is we could use one-time money because the reserves are just one-time in nature. They can't ever fund ongoing expenses because they can only be spent one time. So that would be one-time money. We can reduce expenses. Or we could simply, at year end, there's always some amount of budget savings. We have thousands of budget account codes within our budget, and there are many of them that are not always fully expended. So we typically, from our estimated actuals to when we close the books and we have our actuals, there's always some level of budget savings. Those could be applied to the reserve to build it back up, and that would not affect any current year budget as far as a reduction.
Well, why make the warning light be 17%? Why not 10% or 7%? I mean, that's still a lot more than 3%, you know, before it would hit the red light.
Okay, let me grab my notes really quick.
I think that's the discussion. The heart of the discussion is we're involved in the LCAP process, and we're all working together to identify how do we use our resources, basically $123 million, to service students in ways that their needs and what they need. So in any of us in developing our budget, first of all, what is it that we need to keep in reserve? So what is that number? 3% is the number that's required. I think it's been brought up here and commented a few times that 17% basically funds our district for 2 months. So that in an emergency situation, it's going to be about $10 million to pay everybody to run the programs, to keep them going for 2 months, which allows an opportunity to address it and continue it. It's not a crash. So that's part of why 17%. The other reasons why 17% is in the presentation last week and in the slideshow you have here is that School Services of California reported that in 2020, the statewide average reserve levels for unified districts was 17%. The Legislative Analyst's Office, the LAO, says a 17% reserve equals about 2 months of expenditures and is a common standard for public agencies. And then the Government Finance Officers Association says 17%, again, general purpose governments, it's recommended. So 17% is a number to work with. But it's something that if we arrive at a number that we're comfortable with, then when we go to put this jigsaw puzzle together called the LCAP, we know where that is that we want to keep, you know, is it 3%? Well, 3% in a situation isn't enough to fund or to support or to, you know, in practical. Now, our budgets, our reserves have been at 28%. They've been at 21 or 22. Right now, I think this year they'll be about 20. So nobody's talking about adding money to a reserve. It's just saying, how low can we go and plan for it? And that everybody involved in the decision process, which is everybody, understands that. And says, all right, okay, well, that's part of it. If we say it's 3%, I don't know. People may feel that's too low. Is it 9? Is it 12? Where is it that we feel most comfortable? And that's the heart of the discussion.
Well, I think part of the problem is that we're comparing it to the 3% reserve. Mm-hmm. And it's really not that. It's something else. And it really, we really need to, for the language, call it something else. Mm-hmm. People aren't confused so that if we do have to dip into it for whatever reason, mm-hmm. you know, we're not saying, oh, we're hitting the reserve. Oh, you can't hit the reserve because, you know, the state says 3%. And people are thinking that they're the same thing. And they're different. Mm-hmm.
And then what would be the funding source if it did say you passed the board policy and you set a 17, 15, whatever number to it and it dipped below it, what's the funding source to repay it?
I think it's strategy. And that's why we're having this discussion now before there's any kind of emergency or whatever. It's
exactly.
In our planning. It's
exactly.
In working together and seeing because we're declining. It's a declining deficit. It'll be in a variety of ways to where collectively we understand that that's where we don't want to go and that we plan and make decisions in order to.
In my experience, anytime you spend down your reserve, any school district, it's very difficult to build it back up.
Well, I think if we, you know, I think we have a pretty good business person here, and I think we're pretty intelligent people. Mm-hmm. And I really think that, well, maybe, most of us. But I think that, you know, if a tsunami of problems was coming that would hit us, we would see that coming. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. And I think it's a great idea to be able to carry on for 2 months. But then what happens if something really bad happens?
That's why we have the reserve. An emergency happens, we have, but we have it to hopefully hang in there and fight back in a sense versus being underwater.
As an example, say there was some instance where our revenue was deficited from the state, say that another recession comes or whatever, then and we go below on our reserve, well, because we have the reserve, then we have time to make adjustments in our budget to balance it. If we don't have a solid reserve, then we have to act immediately. And that can, quite frankly, be really devastating. So that a good reserve protects the programs and the staff of the district is what the hope is.
I hear what you're saying, but I think we're going to see it coming. I don't think it needs to be 17%. I think if there's such dire straits coming, you know, we're going to react to it before those 2 months are up somehow. I mean, I don't know. You can't foresee what's going on, but I don't think we need to have it be that high. I mean, we already have a reserve there that we're talking about that is that high, you know, and there needs to be different wording on this, that we are going to keep some kind of fund there. You know, we're going to fund it somehow, but I think somehow calling it a reserve is the problem. I mean, I'm all for having, you know, money there. I have, you know, more money in my checking account than I'm going to spend. You know, that's my reserve. You know, but I think there's just something wrong with calling it a reserve, because people just get confused, because, like, once again, they compare it to the 3% state reserve, and that's not what it is. And we should be able to use it if we need to use it.
I think Angela would like to say something too.
Okay.
This is the last thing.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sorry, I said I wasn't going to do this again, but
next time you might have to bring cookies.
Yeah, exactly. Next time I'm going to have to bring refreshments. But just for the recording, Angela Stiegel, president of the union again, I'm not sure, because my brain almost exploded a minute ago, so I believe it was Mr. Allison, said something about a tsunami coming. I will tell you, the tsunami that you have coming is the fact that this district is not going to be able to hire teachers, because we will not have competitive salaries anymore. We will have health care costs that are out the wazoo, like they already are, and just worse, and we'll be sitting at stagnant wages, because we will sit at the bargaining table, and regardless of what you want to call it, whether you want to call it a 3% reserve or a 17% reserve or whatever it is, when we hit that 17% reserve, when Mr. Carrion goes into closed session with the board to say, hey, the teachers actually want COLA for once instead of 2%, which was about two-thirds of COLA, the board is going to sit there and say, oh, sorry, we have a 17% reserve we have to keep. I know it. I've seen it for 20-some-odd years. I wish I could say otherwise, but I will tell you, that's what you have teachers concerned about. We're not confused about the difference in the terminology between reserves. I could tell you that. I have been doing this a long time. I know exactly what reserve requirements are, and I know exactly what reserves are. The reserves for this district have really not been seriously depleted for years. If you look at the information that has been provided to you, the reserves in this district are not in a world of hurt. I understand that there could be economic uncertainty. I worked in this district under Liebman. That was uncertainty beyond economics. And I can also tell you, I worked in this district when we had Lyndhurst High School without air conditioning. And so I am fully aware. But I will also tell you that the reserves you have sitting in this district right now at 25, 26, 27%, or even the 20% that's being claimed right now, are beyond plenty. And the state says that you have to have a 3% reserve. You are required to, so that the districts can remain solvent for at least a few weeks before they go down the tubes. And so you sit at this 20, 25% all the time, and you still deny teachers the raises that they're entitled to. You still deny them COLA year after year. And so I can guarantee that if you change this reserve to 17%, that these teachers are going to feel it and they're going to see it. And I can also guarantee you that the teachers in this district are about done with just sitting down and laying down and taking it. They do it all the time. Like I said, we had people in our own unit who said, well, let's not fight the district over anything further than 2%, because we understand they got these loan payments and they're trying to keep us solvent. And we all know each other. We've been born and raised in this community or worked in it for decades. And so people didn't want to break this district. And that's not the intention now. But it's high time that the school board decide that you can do something to show these teachers at this point in time, just months after you showed them that they didn't care and that they didn't matter, you can tonight. It's that simple. And so you could talk about tsunamis, you can talk about how we don't understand terminology or whatever, but I guarantee you, 20-some-odd years at that bargaining table tells me that I understand exactly what's going on. And so I hate to be that direct and that angry about it, but this is just beyond. I'm just done at this point in time. And so I do apologize for getting angry and heated, but I could see the writing on the wall. I've been there, done that, as my students will tell you. Thank you.
I'm back. My name is Amanda Bowman. I just have a question, and it was a question when I first went through the packet I still am really unclear of. What districts have a board policy of 17%? So I know, Penny, I've never met you. Hi. I know you mentioned it, and I know, Mr. Cena, you mentioned it. I would love to do some more research on that. What districts are they? Of 17% as their district policy?
Didn't say you didn't ask that.
No, I'm asking for district policy with my question. Sorry. So is what? Because the way it's being presented is, in what I'm understanding, if I'm wrong, please clarify. It does happen. That there are districts who have board policy that their reserve is set for 17%. Did I misunderstand? Because I hear crickets.
No, we didn't say that there are districts that have board policy set at 17%.
Okay.
We said that the average reserve that unified districts have is 17%.
Okay, so statistically
they may or may not be board required.
Okay.
And then the legislative analyst's office recommends 17%, and the Government Finance Officers Association recommends 17%. They're already at, on average, at 17%.
Okay.
So that's where that came from. Right now, I can't tell you of districts that have it that's board by board policy, but there are districts that have board policy
set
reserves.
So I guess,
and again, that's the whole point of the conversation, is to have a shared understanding of what our reserve level is, so that when we're planning, we're all, it's well communicated and it's well understood, and it has a purpose because we're committed to it. If we go below it, we go below it. We'll have to, how often do you hear we'll have to dip into our reserves?
I've been in the district 15 years and I've never heard it.
That may be, but in common language or commonplace, you hear people talk about that, because that may be where we're at some point, because the priority that we're working toward, we may need to dip. But with it comes a responsibility that, hey, we've made a commitment that we're going to try to lift it up, because for the health of the system, we're agreeing that that's what we need.
Okay.
Whatever the number is. 17% was selected because that's what's recommended. A number would be what is the best number to be. Again, the 17% would keep everybody paid and functioning for 2 months. And
so the recommendation is board policy be changed to 17%. Not that we have a 17% reserve, because those are two different things.
Right now,
the way I understand
right
them.
Right now it stands at 21%.
I know.
Yeah.
And it's been that way for a long time.
Right.
I don't like to say a long time, because I've been here that long. So.
And that's part of trying to, but the path we're on a path to.
That's changing by 1% or 2% at a time. And I think Mr. Allison was very eloquent when he said our board is strong enough to keep track of that and be aware of that. And we do have the potential of other monies coming in. I'm going to go back to what I said before. I think making a decision right now, it's still something that needs conversation. So thank you for clarifying.
Yeah.
But I still feel like a board policy on it isn't
necessarily what that recommendation was, but I will look into it. So thank you.
I would just like to say it seemed like we certainly gathered a lot more information tonight, and I just wonder, maybe tonight's not the night to make a decision on it. Maybe we need to have some more clarification and discussion. Go ahead, Mr.
Well, I was just going to say, that's the whole point of the discussion.
Right.
We need to be at a level that a board is comfortable with, and then once we have it, we all know it, we all plan for it, and we know, we go in knowing what the potential costs and benefits of it are. So this is part of what we're wanting to do, is that we all be part of the discussion, part of the decision making, but then when we come to a decision, we all understand it, we all understand why, and it helps us when we're planning in the future so that we can work together and solve.
I would concur with Mr. Rasmussen. I will be honest with you, I'm ready to vote no on this motion anyhow. I'd rather continue level discussion at future board meeting, get some more facts. I think they presented a good argument, I think staff does too. I don't see any immediate urgency, is there, Mr. Cena?
No.
That's just my recommendation.
So then, for a matter of process, we would need a motion to close the public hearing, and then we need a motion to bring it back. Okay. Is there any other discussion? If not, is there a motion to close the public hearing?
Motion to close.
Motion to close the public hearing by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7 yes. Now, is there a motion regarding Board Policy 3100?
I'll make a motion that we bring back any revisions to Board Policy, what was it, 3100, at a different date for more discussion.
I have a motion by Mr. Boom to revisit, bring it back. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7 yes. Thank you very much. Next, we have business services, district certificates of participation. Purpose of the agenda item is to discuss the history and future of the district's 2012 certificates of participation, COP, long-term liability.
And while Mrs. Lostine's getting set up, the purpose behind this presentation is the same. It's to help us all understand, no matter what our roles are, what COPs are. We've heard of it. What is it? And so we all have a shared understanding, and we can apply it to our thinking.
Right. In the spirit of, is this on? Yeah. In the spirit of transparency in our finances, I've put together some information on these COPs that we've all been hearing about. And the COPS stands for Certificates of Participation. The current facts, in 2012, the district issued Certificates of Participation for $18.4 million, and that was to fund the capital projects at the time, and included with that was a refunding of the 2006 COPS of a little over $12 million. And that was the purpose. The repayment for the 2012 COPS begins in June of 2022 and is an annual amount of $2.8 million. And that's for principal and interest payments in 2022 for 20 years through 2042. So long-term debt, when we have general obligation bonds that the taxpayers approve, the taxpayers pay for those. When the district finances projects, with certificates of participation, the district repays that type of loan. They're both considered long-term debt for the district.
Mrs. Lossing?
Uh-huh.
On that, can you go back to that slide there?
Mm-hmm.
So when we say we're refund the 2006 COPS, I mean, we're paying it back, right?
Well, actually, yes. It would be refunding something, a long-term debt, is also another name for refinancing it. So it was refinanced with the new 2012 COPS, and the 26 COPS was paid off in 2018 totally. So we just have the 2012 COPS left with the repayment information is listed here.
So if I could, just to make sure I got
sure.
it right. So back in 2006, the district took out $12.3 million in a loan?
Well, it was $18.4 million.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And then
you're right.
The refinancing of the 2006 COPS was $12.3 million of that.
Okay.
And I have a little more information on it
okay.
as we go through.
Thank you. I'll wait.
So why would the district do this? We were, at the time, this is a slide from our a graph from our capital or our facility master plan that the board approved in the summer of 2016. So, you know, it's a little bit older now. But at that time, since 2005-06, the district had spent over $133 million on capital projects. This slide I really liked because it gave a percentage and dollar amount for each of the different school sites within the district. And that did come directly from our facility master plan. So that we have a context of why the district would get into long-term debt. So the $133.6 million that was spent, the district was actively building and maintaining its facilities. As you can all, I'm sure, recall, there were a lot of new buildings, a lot of modernizations done with that $133 million. And in 2006, the voters approved a $37 million GO bond, general obligation bond, and all of those, that $37 million was issued and spent as part of that $133 million on the projects throughout the district. And then in 2008, the voters approved another issuance of $47 million in GO bonds. And remember, that's what the taxpayers repay. And then as of 2016, $34.4 million of that $47 million was issued and funded capital facility projects. It left $12.6 million in GO bonds remaining to be issued. And so that number may sound familiar because in 2018, they issued the final tranche, which that's just kind of a fancy word for the final piece of the bond of $12.6 million. And in January of this year, the look at the district overall and what was the best way to use additional capital project money was that the board approved the Arboga TK-8 expansion project. And that would use that final $12.6 million of GO bonds, which the taxpayers repay, and then it would use some developer fees that we've already received for a total project estimated cost of about $15 million. So then in 2006 and again in 2012, the COPS were issued to fund capital projects in addition to the amounts provided by those GO bonds. And the district planned to repay the 2012 COPS with developer fees, but noting that if there were insufficient developer fees, then the general fund would cover the shortfall. And that would be an obligation in order to get those COPS that the general fund had to be used if needed for repayment. So the reason we used it for the projects, And noted specifically with purchasing relocatable classrooms that were currently being leased, and then reimbursing the district for prior expenditures related to acquiring the property on Hamilton-Smartsville Road that was set for, you know, future expansion. And then it also noted that in the official documents of the 2012 COPS, that the district may add, change, or remove projects at its discretion. So the second reason was the refunding of the 2006 COPS. And so that refunding occurred, and then the final 2006 COPS were fully repaid in 2018. So now we only owe the 2012 COPS, but that's the $2.8 million that starts in 2023. And so here, the original payment plan on our 2012 COPS, that we intend to use developer fees, and then if they aren't sufficient, the district would have to cover the shortfall from the general fund. So with today's financial environment of very low interest rates, it's come to our attention that it could be the perfect opportunity to lower the interest rate on those 2012 COPS, and it's my understanding that it would make a significant reduction in the payment, the annual payments. And I put several hundred thousand dollars. I had heard $500,000 perhaps, reduction of the $2.8 million but I'm not sure if that's net of any fees that are involved in that refunding, also known as refinancing. So the next steps would be to seek your direction to pursue those refunding of the certificates of participation to reduce that interest rate, and then thereby reducing our annual payment for those 20 years of repayments that are going to be required.
Do you have an idea of what kind of interest rates they're talking about refining at?
You know, I didn't get into the details of it.
Right now they're, what are like 6.7 they are right now, our COPS?
Right.
Yeah, so should be able to refi for around 4, I would think, and do an amortization schedule, and then you'd know exactly what your differences.
It seems prudent to save the district money by doing that.
Yeah, what we would need to know, I would think, as a board, is we'd want to know the fees, you know, the structure, the length of time, how long it's going to take. You know, are they going to lock the rates in? You know, are we going to use, obviously, I don't know that we want to go in on a variable rate. We'd want a fixed rate of some sort.
I agree.
Or a fixed plus or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, to me, it makes a ton of sense. I mean, if we're going to save the district lots of money, and if that's what you're after tonight is direction from the board, I would think that, you know, the rest of the board should, you know, need to speak up and let her know. So
I agree with you, Mr. Boom. It really seems prudent for us to do a refinancing right now to try to get lower rates. I truly agree on that, but I'm still having a hard time wrapping my head around this whole concept of, because it seemed like we only utilized $6 million for different projects of that $18 million and change that we took out in 2012. $12 million of it and change was to pay back a loan that we had some other time. Yeah, I guess if we're thinking that particular philosophy, we might as well take out another loan to pay off this 2012 loan and worry about that 10 years down the road. You know, it just seems ridiculous to me that we would even enter into something of this nature. I know I'm making it way too simple, Penny, but it seems to me that we're using the credit card to pay the bill that we had, and it just seems interesting what the philosophy was back then in 2006 and 2012. And I would just hope that we wouldn't never go down that road again to get us in this mess. But I agree. I think trying to get the interest rate as low as we can right now would be the best for everything. Any other comments or discussion? So I would think just maybe if we had a consensus, we'd like staff to look forward to, or look into seeing what the possibility of refinancing would be.
And we can bring back information regarding that.
And just trying to summarize your presentation, the equation seems to be that there were general obligation bonds passed. In 2006, there was $37 million. In 2008, there was $47 million. And then on top of that, for further projects, the COPs were $18 million in COPs was added to for these projects. And then the plan was that the way to pay it back would be to use developer fees. And then any money that developer fees didn't pay for, use the general fund. So dig into the general fund, and that's why that was set up with the larger reserve, because it pay for it out of the general fund. And that's why the relationship between the discussion tonight between the reserves and the general fund is that's where collectively figuring out, well, okay, what's our base, and then, you know, how much of this is going to be impede on the general fund. And then these ideas, well, how do we avoid it? Well, okay, we've got lower interest rates, so I'm sensing that's what you're working toward directing, but I'm just trying to take what you shared and summarize it. It helps me, and I hope it helps other people to understand it, because I think that's what you were presenting.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Lofing.
You're welcome.
So we have no other business for open session. We are going to reconvene to closed session. If we could take maybe about a 5-6 minute break, and then we'll meet back in the conference room. Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming.